At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use in working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
So everyone, we're so excited to have Rachel Altvader here again with us, Dr. Rachel Altvader, to continue the conversation that we started last week. So welcome.
Thanks for having me back. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
Talk to us about your interest in technology. Where did that start from? How did you know that's the area you kind of want to stake your ground on? And I know it's not your only area, but it is a big area of your life of digital play therapy or technology enhanced play therapy. I mean, there's so many different terms we hear out there. Tell us about how you got there and really spoke to you about that and the infusion of that into play therapy, because it really wasn't there when you started this journey. So
you're a pioneer.
Yeah. Talk to us about it.
Yeah. So I'm going to start off by saying I wasn't allowed to have technology as a kid.
Yeah.
Take that, everyone. I wasn't. And I'm a millennial. So, I technology was around before I was born. But when I was, I guess, a teenager, it started to become a bigger thing. Social media became a thing when I was, I'm assuming, in high school, if not late middle school, but I think high school. But I wasn't allowed to have a phone. I wasn't, we didn't have the internet. I'd have to go to the library to get internet. I felt like I was behind where my friends were. It's not, again, not to the same extent today that it was then, but it was noticeable, you know, when my friends were chatting on
AOL.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I wasn't able to, so that's where it started. And actually at that time, I wasn't thinking I'm going to make this a career. That was not on my radar at all. I was interested actually in being a vocal performer. So I wanted to go to school for vocal performance, and then I wanted to become famous. Thank goodness that didn't happen.
I mean,
oof,
in a different way.
Well,
you're famous.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a famous singer.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I didn't, just with how today's day and age is, I don't think I'd be able to handle it, but anyway, so I was going to go to school for that, and school meaning undergrad. And I was interested in actually music therapy too. I even like traveled to a music therapy program, I think in Ohio somewhere. And I was going to venture into that. Oh, I was starting to say, so once I became famous, I was thinking about opening up a youth group. So there's always been this, I want to work with teens and kids, even through wanting to do something different. Then I went through undergrad and became introduced to child life and art therapy, and ended up pursuing a major in psychology and a minor in family studies. So then I realized, want to work with kids, want to be a child therapist. That was that. Then in my doc program, when I had to choose my dissertation topic, I actually was going to do it in trauma, because play therapy and trauma were my budding areas of expertise at that time. And I knew that that was something I was passionate about. So I had already selected that idea. This is what I'm going to do. Great. I was mindlessly scrolling through social media one day, and there was a parent who posted something about their kid playing with some, what I refer to as a traditional toy. I don't know if it was blocks, dinosaurs, something traditional. and expressing surprise that their child was playing with this toy. And it stopped me. I thought, I am learning at this time how to be a play therapist. I was in my training for RPT at this time. And they're surprised their child is playing with toys that I'm learning are staple play therapy room toys. And a light bulb went off in that moment. And funny enough, I actually remember where I was then. I was snuggled in bed because I was just scrolling through social media. But I thought, oh my goodness, how is this going to impact our field? And so that then made me shift. In that moment, I shifted my dissertation topic and said, I have to look into this because there's something here. And then the rest is history. But that's actually where how I got into to this arena, this area.
But I think that's
That's
really cool because you got curious about it. Because if we don't meet things with curiosity, then we kind of maybe miss out on really important opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of started to share some of this before, but I didn't say it in these ways. Ultimately, our nervous system is wired for self-preservation. Anytime there's something unfamiliar that is presented, our nervous system tries to protect us. Now, it's not going to be the same being curious about a topic versus being out in the wild, right? Trying to fend for our resources. And it still does have a similar type of nervous system response. So there are a lot of times where there is something new and unfamiliar that is automatically rejected. And I actually wonder if sometimes that's what happens with play therapy too. Already familiar with this other thing, I'm not going to venture into the unknown. I think that sometimes happens, and I'm noticing that a lot with technology as a whole and incorporating it into, I mean, really all, every facet of our life, but we'll specifically reference in play therapy. There are so many people that really struggle with accepting technology into the play space. And this is where kids are, right? So if we really follow the core play therapy tenets, we're meeting kids where they are in their space of comfort and familiarity. We're speaking their language. Technology is a modern facilitator of language, and it's just another toy option.
I will say I was fortunate. Dr. Altbader came and presented at one of our conferences here in North Carolina, and it really switched how I worked with one of my kiddos that is technology dependent, really has two modes of play, right? One is technology based, one is more physical, like athletically. And they were doing a lot of athletic play in the playroom and constantly asked if I had digital things, and it gave me the courage to try it, right? Bring it in. I don't have any devices, but he brought in a device to session, and because he really wanted to show me his abilities, his competence, some other stuff in different games, and how it really connects him with his peers and some other stuff. So it was really, I appreciate the push from you, Rachel, to open our eyes to say we could be really entrenched in historical beliefs about play therapy, but without thinking about where are kids today, and what they're exposed to, what are their toys, and are we incorporating those into the playroom? And it was fascinating. I could use the same exact skills we had a whole conversation about because he was playing on some online games, and I was not partaking. Well, he asked me to play, like a duel game where we played against each other, and he's like, "You're terrible, so let me just play against my friend," which is not. I've heard that frequently when it comes to video games because I'm not a video game person, and so wasn't hurtful, was very truthful, and I could respond to the same things I was seeing in other places I was seeing in his activities online. And it also helped me help his parents see things differently. So without bringing that into the playroom, I couldn't see some of the concerns the parents had to the extent related to technology use within our play space. I was able to expose that and help his parents connect with him through these devices too and these games, because his parents weren't part of the technology boom. And so it wasn't part of their childhood like it is for their children. And some really good conversations. I remember talking with the parents about there's big concern, but they keep buying their kids the latest and newest technology. And I was like, then we all need to embrace this. If that's the mode that they're going to play, well, why are you then complaining that they spend a significant time, yet
There's like some
your kids have
cognitive
multiple
dissonance there.
devices and they spend a significant time on here, and then you're upset that they do that, but you keep providing them with the resources to continue to do that because that's what they love. Yet it was just a really good, interesting, and sad to say, but eye-opening conversation that I do need to embrace this movement because I was more hesitant because I think technology is awesome. It can be really connective, and it also has its own properties that we have to be aware of for children today. But I appreciate that. I am sure you get pushback from the child-centered world about technology. So talk to us a little bit about that, because I think it is a helpful discussion for our listeners and our watchers to kind of be self-reflective of, you know, am I staunchly in this? Why am I here? What are my hesitations? Those types of things. So talk to us a little bit about your experience, both as a child-centered play therapist, but then also someone who's really pushing child-centered out, be more contemporary in some ways.
Yeah. My goodness. All the things. I want to just quickly make one comment from what you shared, if that's okay. Yeah, and then I'll answer your question. If a child is struggling with technology, it's so important for it to be introduced into the therapy space. It's so important because I hear that a lot. Well, kids are addicted and it's a problem and they do it too much. Well, then we need to bring that in the therapy room. I always say it's synonymous to a child struggling with depression and a parent saying, you know, my child is really depressed. And for then us to say, your child is too depressed, we can't bring that into this space. We would never, right. Right. And so technology is another potential problem area. Why would we not bring that in if it is? And if it's not, and it's just an area of play and interest and alignment, why not bring that in, right? That's what we want to do. So that I just wanted to make that comment. And that's a beautiful connector to actually answering your question. So yes, I'm a humanistic psychologist. I am all about authenticity, meeting people where they are, illuminating their real self, their ideal self, you know, making more sense of their false self, you know, having a lot of unconditional positive regard and congruence and alignment and connection in all of my work. So that is the core. That is the core of my being. That is the core of me as a psychologist and a play therapist. So I really do appreciate non-directive work. I am a mix. I blend. I have conversations with clients when developmentally appropriate and preferred. But I really want the child to lead. And if a child is coming into a session and they want to bring in technology, they're leading. They are leading. So at the core, that is, I think, a foundational component of play therapy is really truly meeting kids where they are and allowing them to utilize the tools that they want that align with them and to help them work through their psychological distress and be able to see their perspective through their projections and their play. I will say one thing that I do differently is I do ask questions, which is not a purist non-directive approach. You're not supposed to ask any questions. Fun fact, there was actually a time that I challenged myself to ask no questions an entire day. And I told every single person that I came across, every single client, I am trying something today. I'm going to try to ask no questions. If I ask you a question, I encourage you to call me out. Oh, people loved it. They loved it. And I did ask questions because I really struggled with, so it's a little fun fact. But when it comes to questions, I specifically ask questions about the digital platform. I ask about the avatars, about the focus of the game, about, you know, whatever it may be to make more sense. Because like you, Christy, I am not the best. There are some games that I'm good at, and there are a lot that I'm not. And I want to also name that too in answering this question, because I want the people listening to not just think, well, I can't do this. I'm not good at gaming. We all aren't good at gaming, right? I mean, I can't speak for everyone. Can't make absolute statements. Some of you are. Get it. But ultimately, it's not about that. It's not about our performance. We get anxious and ultimately that inhibits the process. Kids are there to lead. They want a sense of permissiveness to do the things that align with them. They want control and mastery. They want to show us the way. How beautiful to have somewhat of a blank slate in this space within the relationship, within the interactions. Obviously, the game is not a blank slate, but it's beautiful. So I just wanted to share those components. But again, to come back to the actual question, I use the same foundational skills with non-directive, reflection of content, reflection of feeling, tracking. You know, ultimately, I find myself to be a projection within the game for the client. If we think about toys or stuffies or whatever it may be, we want in play therapy for kids to place their thoughts, feelings, and experiences onto items, objects, symbols, so that they can work through their challenges. And I notice a lot in gaming, I conceptualize it as I become a recipient of the projection. So I get into the play authentically. And that's, I think, part of that non-directive. I really am fully there with the client, honestly, openly, authentically. And I make sure to play in a way that, of course, aligns with me because it's real. It's real play. And I make sure to highlight components that the child is working through. So if they're working on anxiety and we're playing an anxiety-focused game because that's what they're choosing, because that's what's in the forefront of their mind.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
I will lean into the anxiety more in the space, name it, reflect it. And then this kind of starts to venture into a little bit more directive work, but I will then provide indirect teaching or direct teaching. And so if we are working on certain skills, and again, I know this is venturing from non-directive, but I'll come back to it. But I'll express how my body is experiencing the anxiety and breathe. And I can think of a particular example. I won't go into details. I was really anxious in a game because the music was really loud and there's this antagonistic character coming towards me and I can hear the dun, 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 dun. I'm like hiding, you know? And so I'm thinking, if a child is feeling so fearful in their life and experiences, I'm channeling that now. How am I going to deal with this anxiety? I name it. And then I express when I get really, and this is true too. Right. When I get really anxious, it's hard for me to focus. And I can't think. And I realize I start to mess up more. I name it. I name that. And so again, a little ventured from non-directive, so I'll come back, but I still think it's helpful for those listening because I think a lot of people do integrate both directive and non-directive.
And I would argue that's being genuine and authentic in that moment. The same way that I would say if we were having a sword fight and I was nervous, I might say, I'm nervous, I might get hit, so I'm going to take a step back, right? That seems pretty aligned. It just, as you're talking about, that's really interesting.
Yeah. It's
really fascinating.
Yeah. And you know, it really is the same as traditional play. I think the thing that feels different is it's a different platform or medium, right? And of course, if we do art versus if we do sand trays versus if we play with the dollhouse, it all feels different. It's a different process. It's still play to the core. Technology is the same in that regard, and that it's different. It's the same in that it's different. But I'm saying it's a different process, but it's all the same in being able to access the psyche. Yeah.
It sounds like the intentions are slightly different in those scenarios. Rachel, when you were sharing that, what I sensed from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you were really trying to model and put voice to something. Where Maggie, when you're engaging in sword fighting with a kid, it's not so much about modeling as a relationship between you and the kid and for the kid to accurately assess what's happening for you in that moment. And not that that's not happening for you, Rachel, right? This is where I think it's important for us, especially as we're integrating models, to really be thoughtful about, like, what is my intention in this moment? And even if it's not in that moment after, what was I seeking in doing that? Why did I go in this direction over this direction, right? Because I think that often gets miscued or misunderstood from many clinicians in the field to understand our intentions in that moment so that we can best say what we're doing in the room, how we're helping kids, what we believe kids need, all of those good components from a theory side and a theory perspective.
Yeah. Mm. So beautiful. So true. Something Dr. Jessica Stone always says is know what you're doing and why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you're saying. Yeah. And I just want to name this for anyone who's listening, who's early in your career. We all stumble through and wonder what we're doing. Okay. You could be a registered play therapist supervisor and still at times say, what is happening? Am I actually helping? I don't know what's going on here. It is tough to sift through a nonverbal symbolic process where we're also told interpret with caution or don't interpret. It's really tough to know what's going on because it's not so cut and dry. Like our discussion is here. It's very clear. Right? We're not in that same cognitive processing space. So I just want to normalize, right? You might be listening and thinking, okay, well, you know, we're able to conceptualize some of these engagements and talk about theory more confidently. It's a process. It takes time. Really, it's focusing on that which aligns with you first and foremost, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, absorbing all that you're learning through your education, through your experiences, through your continuing education, and really ask yourself what aligns with you. And this is my humanistic psychologist self coming out, but you know, that is going to be the way that you end up providing treatment. And it's okay if it's a little different from some of what you're hearing here or some of what you've learned so far. So I just want to give that little plug because I know most of us, all of us feel some level of anxiety and uncertainty, and normalizing it is, it takes away its power. It's important.
I think even we talk about this a lot is like, whenever Christy and I talk, I'm like, oh, I should have thought about that. Even as you were saying, where is your intention? Oh yeah, you're right. It's hard. And when you're in those moments, it does feel overwhelming sometimes. And that's where I think is the importance of reflective practice. Where do we look back on this? And what is our, and what feels authentic to us? And I think that's what you were talking to as well, Rachel.
Absolutely. And this is a great connector back to what we were mentioning before with the non-directive. What's aligned with the client? Because that's really the focus. I mean, it's the focus of play therapy, period. No matter what framework you are working from, at the core, there really are those humanistic qualities. Mm-hmm. Really meeting kids where they are, speaking their language, you know, inviting them into a space of comfort and familiarity.
Okay, I have a question because this has always been my pushback for technology, is that if it's about the relationship, if the child is in the room and using technology, how are you capable of maintaining that relationship? And even as I asked this question, I've been thinking about it. Okay, well, I have a relationship when they're doing art, and that is also a very singular focus. I have it when they're playing. So for some reason, it feels different when I'm talking about technology, but I'm not sure why. And so I'm curious your perspective.
Yes. So one of the articles that I found, I believe for my dissertation, I think it was my dissertation research, it was likening technology to an interpreter triad, mm-hmm. where a child is speaking through an interpreter. Mm-hmm. And that does shift the dynamic. So you are absolutely feeling something that a lot of people feel. It is valid. And yeah, I hear all that you're saying. Yes, we can conceptualize, oh yes, this is just another toy. There is something different though, because it does seem a bit more at times a child could be speaking through to this technology, right? If they are on a screen and we aren't necessarily integrated into the screen or into the play in the same way that maybe we're used to, it is synonymous to having a third party in the room. And how does that shift the dynamic, mm-hmm. right? When there's an interpreter in the room. And I've never had an interpreter in a play therapy session, so I don't want to speak ignorantly. And I could imagine, yes, that's going to alter the relationship and the interaction somehow. So yes. And I think that it's really about leaning in. You know, if a child feels more comfortable to use technology as an interpreter, right? We'll just use that same thought. Maybe that provides a safe enough distance for a child to be able to show and share what it is that they are processing. And that's okay. That's what we do in play therapy, right? Maybe they need a little extra layer of protection, of comfort. If they are, hypothetically speaking, more comfortable being in their room by themselves, maybe having social challenges, because I think that's kind of a stereotypical viewpoint with some people who might spend a lot of time online. Well, if they're willing to show us that, then thank goodness they're inviting us into some of their experience. And if they need a little bit more comfort, that's okay. We want that. We encourage that. Whether it's a transitional object, whether it's your favorite stuffy, whether it's, for my son, a car, or, you know, technology.
Yeah.
And I think it's then it's a matter of, okay, well, is it going to be solo play? Because then we have to think about the different kinds of play. I think that there is a perception sometimes that, you know, we should be doing more. And I think this is an early career, a forever career thought. It's really a forever career thought. Am I doing enough? The amount of times that I talk with people in supervision about this, I feel like I should be doing more. Mm-hmm. Or even just yesterday, I had two supervisees that in discussed feeling insecure, and they're fully licensed people. And I'm like, you are right where you need to be, normalizing this, right? We question, we feel like we should be doing more, but ultimately, where is this client? Where is their comfort? Developmentally, where are they? Mm-hmm. Does it make more sense for them to engage in solo play? Are they more in a space of parallel play? So maybe they're playing solo. We feel like technology might be a little bit of a barrier, but we're able to now witness the process from a third party perspective, you know, and then maybe, you know, a long time ago, I had a client playing with a dollhouse and had their back to me over and over and over again, week after week after week, didn't invite me into the session. And I just tracked and reflected and was present and held the space. And eventually one day they turned around and invited me in, you know? And so sometimes it takes a while for a child, for a person to feel comfortable enough to invite you into that space that doesn't shift the benefit of the play that they are engaging in.
As you're talking through this, here's where I'm struggling. I'm going to be super concrete. So what does that look like? I've played Roblox with kids during COVID, right? And I can see how it was beneficial and it aligned and I was able to track. So when you're bringing technology into the session, is it unique to each child? You always have a computer that they can play with. And then also I'm a little nervous that there's a computer because I got some kids who like to throw stuff. What does this look like in practice for someone who's very ignorant and new to this topic?
Yeah. So many answers for you.
You mean there's not just one simple thing?
No, never. What? Never. Never. My favorite psychology answer is it depends. Mm-hmm. It depends. Goodness, so many thoughts. So I'll try to do snippets of each little kind of high level responses. I will say it's so important at the core, though, to make sure that you are focusing on thematic play, symbolic material, and metaphors, because that I think is going to help so much when we're actually moving through the play and feeling uncertain. To answer the questions, though, so yes, it looks different for every client. I encourage clinicians to set the parameters of their play space because there are so many options. What do? Do I go into this game? Do I go online? Do I have something downloaded on my tablet? Do I have a tablet? Do I have a computer? Do I have a phone? Do I? All these questions. It's so overwhelming. What feels comfortable for you first? Is it just engaging in conversation? If you engage in verbal dialogue, if that aligns with your framework, are you engaging in conversation with your client about their spaces of interest? What they're playing, how they're playing. That's how I started because I was under supervision. And at that time, I didn't even think to incorporate digital technologies, nor I think would it have really been allowed, to be completely frank. And so I engaged in conversations. My clients would talk about the games that they frequented, that they were super interested in. And we got a lot of really solid therapeutic material through just, they were just talking, right? I'm air quoting for those who can't see me, just like we're just playing. They were just talking about the game. What is drawing them to this space? So I leaned into that and it really aligned very well with their framework. So I won't get into the details of that just for confidentiality purposes, but also time. So that's how it started. That might be how it starts with you. And then I ended up having a tablet that I incorporated into sessions that was specifically a playroom tablet. And I just had it leaning up against the wall and it was just another toy in the room. And you would think that every child would want to gravitate towards that tablet. Every child saw it and not every child gravitated towards it. Some did, sure. Not everyone did though. So that was how I started in person, was just having a tablet. I have since incorporated, we have VR headsets at my practices. I do engage in a lot of digital play in Roblox. That is a favored space for a lot of my clients. And so I'm on my computer. I actually provide fully virtual services at this time. My practice, I have an in-person practice, multiple locations, but I'm personally just fully virtual at this time. And so I'm on my computer. I have my computer. But in person, I would err on the side of caution of using your personal devices. I would definitely have a separate login if you end up using it. But I find I know every child is different and their challenges do vary. I've found that in my experience, my clients have been very gentle and, for lack of a better word, respectful of the toys. But that's not to say that kids aren't going to throw things. You know, I definitely had a very nice, solid case for my tablet just in case. Little bumps. So yeah, now as a humanistic psychologist, I am completely comfortable with a child bringing anything technology related into the space. And I get a question, what if it's inappropriate? Therapy is a fantastic space to work on healthy digital citizenship, to learn how to navigate in healthy ways. How many kids are on screens and they don't have any true parental guidance? Like either they don't have parental guidance on their devices or they're just doing whatever on their devices and venturing into the dark corners of the web without support, right? So if that's what they're doing and they end up showing us that in sessions, what great insight for us to recognize that additional support is needed. I find this synonymous to a child coming into a session, this has happened, and pulling their pants down because they've been traumatized, because they maybe learned inappropriate boundaries. That's not on them. They didn't realize that someone told them that. So same thing with online. If there's a lot of uncertainty, is it that you feel uncomfortable, if you feel comfortable having a client bringing in a device, would you just want them to bring in their devices? Do you only want to bring in a device? I know when I was learning about play therapy, traditional play therapy, there was some training where it said, don't have clients bring toys into the space. I'm okay with that, right? But again, this goes back to your framework, right? Because you're going to start hearing different things from different people and you're like, well, which one's right? All the above. It depends.
Yeah.
Going back to what you were just saying, Maggie, it depends. So yeah. I don't know if that fully answered your question. I'm happy to expound in any direction if desired.
No, I think we'll have you come back.
Yeah,
thank you. I mean, will. That's the thing is, it's just so intriguing. And I think it's like, there are a lot of things I think that are really relevant. And I think, you know, Dr. Courtney Glickman also. And as you were talking, I was like, okay, so it's okay if I have my perspective and my theory and I can incorporate technology and like Courtney has chickens. And I think that's really cool. I may not have play therapy chickens and that's okay too. Right. And so it's like, it's not about my way is right. It's I'm really curious and interested. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I will or will not incorporate. I think it's all about insight and awareness and allowing yourself to think and expand outside of your comfort zone. And so I really appreciate it. And you've given me a lot to think about.
I'm so really glad. Like it. I'm glad.
Please like it.
Thanks for coming and listening in this week on our Playful Beginnings podcast. Remember to, Rachel,
please like and subscribe.
Yes. And you can find Rachel on social media.
Beacons.ai/Doc Vader. All of my socials are connected there. So we'll link the description for you.
Awesome. And we'll put it in the description. And you can find us at playtherapyspace.com and playtherapyspace on all of the socials.
And if you have any questions or comments or topics you want us to cover, don't forget to send us an email or comment below. Email is at info@playtherapyspace.com. Thanks y'all for tuning in.
Thank you.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.